Listener production.
Hello, this is The Weekend Briefing, where we go deep with the humans behind the headlines. My name is Tom Tilley, and in this episode, we've got an interview with one of the very interesting contestants from the Alone series on SBS. So that is that incredible show where they drop 10 people into the bush and see who lasts the longest before they basically blow the whistle and get themselves pulled out of there. It's been incredibly successful. So season one, which was set in Tasmania, it was the most successful show on SBS ever, with over a million people tuning into each episode. Now they're back in season two. This time they dropped the contestants into the South Island of New Zealand with its huge snow-capped mountains, really high rainfall and sub-zero temperatures. And the person we're speaking to is very interesting. Andreas Lunden, his name is. He's 43 years old. He's Swedish. In his spare time, he's an ethical hunter. So he goes out with a bow and arrow, killing and then eating the animals that he hunts. Being Swedish, he'd grown up in cold weather. So that's a win for him, especially going into New Zealand. Also, the hunting, obviously, very helpful. Andreas Lunden, welcome to The Weekend Briefing.
Good to be here.
So, for someone who loves to hunt, was it inevitable that you would go on this series? Was it really calling you?
I don't think that it was that I hunt that made that call. I've been a fan of the series for like a decade. So, I used to look at the series around the world. It's my type of show. I would scour internet, YouTube, History Channel, like trying to get a glimpse of everything. And I literally said, if it ever gets to Australia, I am so applying. So I did.
Did you try out for the first series?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, didn't get through that one.
Right. What do you think happened this time?
I think it's like casting's anything, really. It's partly it's a number game. And then it's luck as well, I guess. Mm. Like you have something that they look and they probably wanted. And then it all adds up. I honestly think I modeled for many years and castings for me were never like personal because if you take everything personal, then you feel like awful because you're going to be rejected all the time. Right. So it's just you go into something. If there's something you want to do, just apply. And then if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. Nothing happened. You haven't lost anything. A little bit of time putting it together. Right.
But at some point they're going to want a guy with blue eyes and a jawline like yours.
Yeah, or either someone who can remotely, you know, is dumb enough to try to starve forever, you know? Like it's.
But you have a passion for hunting, right?
I love hunting. I think hunting is great. I would probably call myself an outdoorsman, really. Like I spend a lot of time in the outdoors. I enjoy it.
And so growing up in Sweden, you left Sweden at the age of 19?
Yeah, 19 was the first time I sort of traveled overseas and went away, yeah.
So that makes this series an interesting one for you because you're used to cold climates where a lot of us here in Australia aren't. So that gave you an advantage, you hunting outdoors. I'd love to go back into your story a bit before we sort of find out what happened when you were out there on the South Island of New Zealand. What skills did you pick up in terms of hunting and surviving outdoors in Sweden that an Australian growing up here might not have?
I think you can get the skills wherever you live, to be honest. I think it's more about upbringing. So I grew up in a really small place. It's like 1,200 people, little village. I had a forest in my backyard. I was fairly close to the ocean. My dad's fishing, like grew up fishing. I didn't hunt at all. I had friends who hunted and I always wanted to hunt and I wanted to do that. But in Sweden, the different thing in Sweden versus Australia is in Sweden, hunting is a huge privilege and the people are guarding it. So you either have land, your own land, and you can hunt, or you pay a lot of money to be able to hunt. Mm. And game meat is seen as an absolute delicacy. Like you pay top dollars for venison and all these things. Like the whole community wants it. It's not like, then I moved to Australia and people went like, oh, do you eat deer venison? Not really. Like, and I couldn't believe it, right? And then fast forward, the same thing with Australia. Like you have a really good set up here in the sense of like we have good fishing. Fishing is very affordable. We have lots of land. And then unfortunate, we have the whole feral animal problem we have here. Mm. And the feral animals, like they got introduced here. They don't have natural predators. They do damage to nature. They do damage to farmers. We need to control the population somehow. Mm. It's not like that won't happen if you don't hunt. It just means if they're not, if people don't hunt and eat them, then the government's going to pay shooters, helicopter shooters, or they're going to poison them, or they're going to find out another way. Like they've done, you know, many different ways. But the way I see it is a resource for me, and I'm helping the nature at the same time. I manage the numbers, get your license, go out, and then I can keep the meat.
Okay. So before we get into a loan, just to unpack even further about your life beforehand. So you've grown up with an interest in hunting and surviving outside in Sweden. You've brought that to Australia. You now live an interesting life for someone, you know, the whole nation's going to see you in this show in this really outdoorsy hunting context, but you actually live in the inner city of Sydney and you're a personal trainer.
Yep.
So how does all that work in your day-to-day life now? How much of the time are you going out bush from the center of Sydney, and how much meat are you eating from what you're hunting?
So the way I see it is like I get bored quite easy. Mm-hmm. If I had to live one life and just that one life follow the same path, then I'll get bored. So I'd rather have like a big city life, enjoy everything the city can offer, the hustle and bustle, the good food, the restaurants, all that stuff.
And also as part of that,
step out of it.
That urban culture,
yeah,
you know it well because you've traveled the world as a model. You've been to all the big cities. You've been to fashion shows.
Yeah.
You get that.
Yeah, no, like I'm a city person. I love the city. Like don't get me wrong. But if you love the city, why do you want to live in the city all the time? Same thing, if you're an outdoor person, why do you have to be outdoors all the time? Like, I don't see the point. Sydney is really cool because I can live in the middle of Sydney. I can jump in a car and in 20 minutes I can sleep. I can go swim in the beach. I can spearfish. I can fish in the ocean. I can drive an hour and a half up the mountains. I can fly fish and trout fish for up in the Blue Mountains. I drive for a couple of hours, 2-3 hours, I'm in hunting grounds. So I can get deer, wild pig, all that. So Sydney is one of the few major cities I know where everything is so accessible within a day's travel. Mm. So why wouldn't you? That's basically the life I live. So on a Monday, like Monday to Friday, I run my own business. I'm a personal trainer. I go to the gym. I'll do all the city things. And then if something fun is on the weekend, I stay in the city.
Okay.
But another weekend, I might go spearfishing. Another weekend, I ride my mountain bike and do a race. Another weekend, I'll go hunting. Another weekend, like I'll pick and choose what I want to do. And everything has seasons. So currently it is a really good hunting season. So
tell us about the hunting. What kind of hunting do you do?
So predominantly I hunt for eat. That's my main motivator, right?
But you don't shoot, do you? You don't shoot guns?
No. So I hunt with a bow and arrow. I never actually hunted with a gun. That's just where it went. I did archery as a kid. I did archery, I think I started 9, 10, 11, shot for a few years up in my teenage years and then got bored and did something else. So
you spend your weekends out in the bush with a bow and arrow?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. If that's what I want to do for that weekend, and I prefer to eat hunted meat. I prefer to eat things I hunt and gather. I can't not shop. I go to the shop like everybody else. But
for the meat especially.
For the meat in particular. Or like I pick berries and mushrooms and all that stuff as well. It's seasons. Like whatever's in season, I'll try.
We all have blackberries in Australia.
Yeah,
so
blackberries is in. But so it's all these things that come together, right? And that the hunting day, like if things go well for me, then I might eat hunted meat and protein 5 days a week.
Right.
If it goes badly and my freezer is slightly empty like it is now, then I probably have one or two meals a week that is hunted meat. So like this is the season now. I've had a show. I've been away. My freezer is not a well-stocked freezer.
But generally, at least half the meat you eat would be stuff you've hunted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Often more.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And it depends. Like I think what I have at home, I have some, you know, I have some eel. I probably have some wild pig. I probably have a piece of goat. I don't have any venison left. I think I have one or two trout left from last season. But that's about it.
So how did you think about this task of going to survive in New Zealand, given the skills you have, which we've just talked about, and maybe given some of the gaps you might also have?
So I think this is probably what a lot of people don't realize watching the show. I believe that you can't really prepare that much for the show. Mm. I think they throw you a curveball either way. Like you jump into the show. Like for example, I got told you're in the show. I was like, fantastic. And then I was like, you start thinking about what should I do? What should I bring? And you're trying to read about plants and stuff like that. And then they go, by the way, you're going to New Zealand. And then everything goes out through the window again, right? Mm. And then you get to New Zealand and you have like what they call a boot camp before, you know? and you hop in there and it's going to, you know, what's the land like? And then suddenly there comes like you can fish that, you can hunt that, you can't do that. Like there's rules and regulations for everything. Mm. And how do you prepare for that? Like you don't. You just rock up, you look at the land, you read the land and you think, what do I need to do?
So how different would it be surviving where you did in the show versus, say, one of the state forests where you go hunting in New South Wales?
It depends which state forest and where you go. And so the biggest difference, I would say, is a lot wetter. So like in South Island, New Zealand, rains more. So you got a lot of rain. It's cold. It was winter time. And all those things, if you hunt and fish, you know that all those things don't really work that well with hunting and fishing. Hmm. So that's a challenge. And for example, if there was a lukewarm, nice New South Wales state forest, I wouldn't bother doing anything about protecting myself. I just sleep on the ground somewhere. Mm. But you're rocking up and you realize it could rain really badly here, then you put your priority would be to make a shelter or to get roof over your head. I think every situation, every location has its own risks, if you like. Mm. And you have to be able to think on the spot and change for that.
What did you think of the choice of New Zealand? Because I know some people are saying, well, this is the Australian Alone franchise, and we're shooting it in another country. But obviously, it's dramatic, fascinating, wild landscape.
It is, and like it's if you look at around the world, like you think about the American, which is the original one, right? American, they shot in several different countries. They went down to Patagonia. They were, you know, they were up in the Arctic Circle. Like they changed locations as well. So I don't think that's a problem.
Did you find out you're on the show before you found out the location?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So take me to the moment where you find out it's the South Island of New Zealand. What goes through your head? And does it fill you with fear or excitement?
Not fear. It's like, what have I done? Like I studied in New Zealand, but I was up on the North Island and that was a time in my life where I was like everybody else, students. I studied, I partied. I actually did no outdoorsy stuff for all the time I was in New Zealand on the North Island. And then South Island, like I visited once, you know, like I did not know. I don't know the fauna. I don't know the animals. I don't know anything. I know it was cold. I know it's wet. And
it's cold. It's wet. You've got the fjords, the waterways. You've got steep mountains. You've got snow. But I mean, I think a lot of us Australians maybe have limited knowledge of what the fauna is like there, but we know it's a bit smaller in general. Is that fair to say?
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
No?
I think the country is smaller, but the location.
Kangaroos, emus, crocodiles, big boars. Do they have big boars?
They have boars, yeah. Yeah. So it depends on location in New Zealand, but New Zealand got elk, for example, which we don't hear, which is the largest of deer species. So New Zealand got lots, like the hunting and fishing scene in New Zealand is massive. The whole survival thing, the outdoor, I would say it's almost bigger than here. Mm. Different. That's all it is. Mm. It's different. You know, I know hunters and fishermen here who travel to New Zealand to have that experience, but I also know, you know, Kiwis who go over to Australia to have that experience. So it's sort of like it's just different. And that's what I mean. If you prepare yourself too much for it, like too specific, you're just going to be disappointed because you're going to rock up there and everything you practiced is going to be over there. Like it's not going to make sense. So I think prepare yourself for a broad range, as in, you know, can you make a shelter? Yes. Can you make fire? Yes. Under what circumstances? Yeah, for example. And for example, just talking about the items, for example, I can make a fire. I'm confident with a fire. I can rub two sticks together. I can make a fire that way. Bringing a fire steel is a no-brainer because I knew it was going to be wet, humid, rainy, windy. Like it's going to be hard and I don't want that risk of me spending heaps of time to get a little coal and then it goes out and you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So you're trying to make life easy for you.
So how many items could you take and what were some of the hardest choices?
So we're allowed to take 10 items. Some of them were pretty self-explanatory for me. And some of them were like, yes and no.
Okay, so what are the 10 items?
So
you got a tarpaulin, some sort of shelter?
There's a tarpaulin in there everybody use. That tarpaulin goes with the camera equipment. So you get a whole box with camera equipment. You get a tarpaulin so you can keep filming. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, everything is going to get ruined, right? You are allowed to use that. Then there's an option to take another tarpaulin if you want a bigger tarpaulin to get like a more substantial shelter or ground floor or something like that, like a ground sheet. I didn't choose that. I thought I could make do with what I had. Sleeping bag was a no-brainer for me. It's going to cover cold. Fire steel was a no-brainer. Bow and arrow was a no-brainer. That's like the throw. Fishing gear was also a no-brainer for me. Then on top of that, I bought an axe. I bought a saw, a multi-tool, a shovel, a pot. But some of them were like, some of them I was tossing and turning. Like the multi-tool, yeah. I was like, am I bringing a multi-tool? Should I bring a knife? Because knives are very easy to use. I was worried about sharpening the tools. There's no point having all these tools if they, like, you lose sharpening. So I wanted like a main cutting tool that if worst comes to worst, I have one cutting tool. And I chose an axe for that. So that was my main cutting tool, was using an axe.
So what was number 11 on the list? The thing you would have liked to have taken, but you couldn't, or you didn't. Or the thing you wish you had once you got out there.
I think there's an option for a salt block. Like to use some salt. That crossed my mind. I was considering that as a good choice. Chose against it. And then there was one thing. You can use cordage or like rope. And there's two types of cordage you can choose. There's paracord, which is like a sheathed cord with cores inside. And then there's like something called a bank line. And bank line is a little bit like harder, twisted, tarred.
Okay.
But in muchness, that wouldn't have made any difference anyway.
Most of us will have no idea what you're talking about. Let's get into the first day. So what does it feel like when that boat pulls away and you're there on your own for the first time starting this adventure?
It's going to sound really boring, but I actually felt like I'm going camping.
Okay.
I think if you've done that thing, like, yeah, fair enough, they're driving away in the boat and it's really dramatic and all that. I think there was a little bit of feeling, oh shit, it's actually started. But at this point, your brain has already prepared. Like you've been told, so I think you've got a couple of months in preparation from that said you're in, and then you have a couple of months until you're out there. And you process most of the things. So I didn't really have a big moment of that. They were sort of landing and then I looked around and I went, whoops, this is going to be hard. And then let's see what I got to work with. And then I did a little bit of a walk around the first day trying to figure out what to do and where to do and put my shelter. And then I didn't have the most stable weather where I was. So that was sort of the first thing. I was just going to make sure I don't get in trouble the first thing. Because like if you get soaked there, which is easily happen, you're in trouble. Like you're in trouble. Not only that you can get hypothermia and all those things, it just can ruin days because it's going to take time to dry things. It's going to it's just things you don't want to happen, right?
So how soon did you have your first moment where you thought, uh-oh, I'm in trouble here? Or did you never have it?
Yeah, you do. But I'm generally quite a positive person. I tend not to encourage thoughts of negativity when I'm out.
Okay.
Because thoughts of negativity, if you go, it's different. We're going, oh, whoa, this is going to be hard. I see that as okay.
Realism.
Yeah. But if you're going, oh, I'm in trouble, then you are planting seeds of doubt in your head.
But realism requires that in some situations because you need to give almost an emergency level response if things really are going south.
Depends how comfortable you are with being uncomfortable. So I'm pretty uncomfortable being uncomfortable. So it's a work, and I think that's a mental strength you have, and it's something you develop. And it's like it's something that it takes quite a lot to ruffle my feathers, and I think that's a really good skill going into something like this, that you have that mental strength. It's like I felt like I had pretty good control as I landed. I knew what I had to do. I knew what was expected of me. I knew what I wanted to do and work through it. And like, obviously, I'm not saying this is easy, but I think it's very important that you have a positive mindset about it because you don't have anyone you can bounce off and talk about and, you know, vent to someone. Like whatever's in your head, that's what you got to live with. And if you're then going in there thinking, I'm going to stay here for X amount of months or whatever, and if you on first, second, third, fourth day are starting to put doubts, I can tell you those doubts are not going to get better by the time you stay longer. They're going to get worse because you are going to get hungrier. You are going to, you know, I'm not delusional. I don't think I'm going to have a Shangri-La with a nice little bed and plenty of food and I'm going to live a life. ain't going to happen.
But also when something bad happens, you're going to see it as a challenge rather than a downward spiral. That's the sort of reframe that any challenge or situation requires. So tell me about the first time you hit a significant challenge point.
Finding a good shelter spot was something that I wouldn't say get to me, but it was something I realized pretty quickly. There's like, they ain't going to be perfect. Like, it's not going to be perfect. I'm not going to be able to make this perfect. There's no chance. So you sort of got to just accept what you got and do the best you can and then move on.
How nomadic were you?
So I think, me personally, not very. My location dictated quite heavily what I could and couldn't do.
What was the longest you spent with one camp set up?
So I literally had a really short day camp the first day, which ended up being not great. And then I figured out another way to move, not far. Like, we're talking, I moved 70 meters to a better spot, and then I stayed. I didn't have options. That was basically it. There was sort of
big cliffs or things you couldn't go past.
Big cliffs, swamps, standing water, and dense forestry. I probably had 70 meters,
wow,
by 70 meters by 30 meters. That was even possible.
That must have limited what animals were coming into your area as well. What were you able to hunt?
So we were able to hunt a range of things. There is, like, the land holds animals. Then you as a hunter got to make the decision, are these animals likely to be around? Are these animals, is it enough of them to warrant walking away for an hour and spending that day hunting? Does it warrant the energy expenditure it takes to get to the point you need to hunt and then go back? So for example, take the lotto, right? So you spend $20 to buy a lotto ticket, and it's like 1 in 5 million or 10 million chance you're going to do. If you relied on that, would you take that risk? If your life depended on that
no,
you're winning, no, you wouldn't.
You buy some rice.
Exactly. You take that $20 and you buy rice. It's not as good as being rich and be able to buy all the things, but you buy the rice because that's the safe bet. Same thing goes in survival. You have to make that call. Is it worth the risks and the hassles versus what is the reward you're getting back? And that's everything. That is water, food, shelter. Like, you could build this amazing cabin to live in with doors and awnings and all that thing, but it takes too much energy to do. So you don't, because the reward is not big enough versus, and I think that's, especially if you're not an outdoor person, if you don't do this, a lot of people probably look at it and go, why don't they build a bigger shelter? Why didn't they do that? And most often there's a calculated risk. You looked at it and you went, it's not worth doing for the reward I get.
It's an economy of resources.
It's economy of resources, exactly. And if you set up with very few resources, then you need to be very careful what you do because you have a limited amount. And I think there was episode 2, they showed me venture around, right? And
you eat this local little fern and tastes,
yeah, exactly,
tastes pretty ordinary and doesn't look very nutritious.
So if you think about that, so that took me, I think that little walk for me were like 3 or 4 hours to find that, right? And later on, to go to that spot back and forth was like an hour and a half because it was that dense. So then your reasoning is, you look at it, it's like, okay, if you want to eat a little piece of root this big, that probably gives you, what, 20 calories. Is it worth bush bashing for an hour and back to get the 20 calories? It costs more to go there and back. So then just doing that on a regular basis is out of question. It's more or less you have to collect things you need to do in that part so you can do all of it at once and do one trip and then...
Okay. Try,
you know, like it's exactly what you say. It's economy. You've got to be very careful where you spend your energy and can I get some in return?
So going and finding a plant, even though the reward might be fairly low, at least it's guaranteed. You know it's there. Whereas hunting game, that's a lottery, right? So that calculation of how you use your resources when there's wild animals involved who might dodge your arrow, that becomes a lot harder. So tell us about that side of what animals did you kill? What did you eat when it came to meat? Did you get any?
So the third episode, I got myself a possum. That was a huge relief, getting something.
How many days in? That was a few days in?
I don't know how many days in it was. It might be in the first week or something like that.
Mm. Were you getting hungry by then?
Yeah. Like, I guess I'm lucky in that. Like, hunger is not a big thing for me.
What do you mean? Hunger's not a big thing for me. Of course it is.
No, it's not really. Like, it's a mental state, right?
If you know there's going to be something at the end of it, it's a mental state.
No, it's always a mental state. So, like, I started physiology, right? So there's physical receptors in your stomach saying that your stomach is empty. There is blood sugar control that you, you know, drop, and then the body will start making ketones, and they will tell you to eat. You get cravings and all those things. The physiological aspect of hunger, I know, and I can preempt them. You know it. Drink some water. It's going to fill up your stomach. It's simple. Like, you know, and then, yeah, that's a problem. But then the rest of hunger for me, everybody's probably different, but the rest of hunger for me is just a mental game, and I can ignore that pretty well.
Because given how much you know about the physiology of hunger, you know that you have a much greater amount of time than the point you were at when you've got the possum.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because how long can we go without eating something, as long as we can drink?
It's like, I think the data on that is out there. Like, it's not.
But it's 30 days, 40 days maybe?
It depends on your body.
Yeah.
So how much do you consume? How much body fat do you have? You have a higher body fat, you last longer. Are you?
But it's more than a week when you got the possum.
It's more than a week. Most people, it's more than a week. Mm. But at the same time, if you're doing this show, you want to stay as long as possible, you've got to be like smart with it, right? So, like, for example, my body, my size, my, it's called a basic metabolic rate, basically means how much energy I need to stay the way I am. It's 2,400 calories a day. That's what I need. If I eat less than 2,400 calories a day, I lose weight. If I eat more, I gain weight. Simple. 2,400 calories in the bush is more or less impossible. Like, it's, you need to eat, you know, 5 kilo meat, six. Like,
but if you got a venison on the first day.
Yep.
And you had however long you can make that meat last before it became poisonous.
Yep.
That's going to get you there, right?
It's going to get you one step further. But I don't think people realize how little calories is actually in wild meat.
Oh.
So if you think about it, venison, right? So venison is 6% fat as a whole animal. You know, that's the average. So most of the meat.
So quite lean.
Very lean. So let's forget about the fat for now. Just think about the protein, right? So 100 gram of venison will give you 20 gram of protein, roughly. So for you to eat, let's say you ate a kilo of meat, that gave you then 200 grams
of protein.
Of protein, which is 800 calories. So it's 800 calories in a kilo of meat.
Okay.
If I need to eat 2,400 a day, I need to eat what, 5 kilos a day?
So what was the best value food out there in terms of calories and, you know, versus effort and what's required to get it?
So looking at what we got, our options, I made a call quite early that fishing's going to be good. There was supposed to be trout in the lake, and trout is a fatty fish. Fat contains almost twice the amount of energy as protein. So it's a higher energy dense food. It should be more readily available than big game animals. So fishing was, even though I'm a hunter, I would love it. I went in there and I go, hunting's going to be great, but if I need to stay a long time, I need to fish.
So you just had some fishing line on a string, on a stick, basically?
So if you choose your fishing gear as one of your items, you get an X amount of line and 20 hooks. That's it.
And you did choose that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So you get these line, fishing line, and hooks. That's it. So you don't get any bobbers, no floaters, no sinkers, no rods, no reels, nothing like that. So then you...
Just hooks and line.
Hooks and line. And then you got to make something out of it. And so far in the show, we've basically just seen a little bit of my fishing rod I made.
Okay, but that's a journey we're going on, the sort of technological improvement of your fishing apparatus.
And that's something like you develop as well as you go. Like, you start with something and then you start fishing and then you realize that maybe something didn't work as well as you do and you try to improve it, or you're trying to, like, that comes with everything. Like, same, making fire. Fire the first time was very different to making fire the 100th time or the 50th time or the 10th. Like, you develop every time you do it, you learn something from the previous time.
Hang on, did you make 100 fires? That means you must have stayed in the...
Oh, either that or they went out a lot. To be honest, that's another thing. So when it comes to equations, if you have a fire, you start a fire in the morning to boil some water to have a drink. You got to make an economy once again, right?
So you couldn't just drink the water out of the lake?
You could take the risk if you wanted to, but...
Did you?
No. Hmm. It's stupid. It's silly. Really? Silly to take the risk. You go home. You get Guardia and you go home. You get a parasite, you go home.
But that's so you have to make a calculation on
that. You have
a
calculation on the risk.
So what is the chance of getting sick from drinking that water? What did you know? Did you have...
No, we don't have those data. But
so you're guessing?
Yeah. So most people who lives in the outdoors will take the call that it's not worth drinking water if you have the means to boil it. But what I'm getting at, if you boil this water in the morning, right? So you take your tinder, you use your fire steel, you start a little fire, you use small twigs, and you put bigger thing, you get a little fire, you put your pot on there, and then you boil the water. You boil the water and you drink it. Now, you got to make a call. Am I going to keep this fire alive all day so I don't have to do the energy of starting it up again, using more tinder, using more twigs, using more? Or am I going to just let it die and redo it next time I need it? And that's a calculation too, because firewood takes time and energy. Gathering tinder is hard because it rains all the time. You got to find it. You got to keep a stock.
Find the dry stuff. Yeah.
Find the stuff. So all that stuff. So every time you even like, you joke about it, say like the 100 time fire, right? Mm. It's not like you're making fire
once,
and then you just like let it go all
Chuck
day.
Chuck another log on, mate.
Because you don't. You don't have the resources. So you need to literally make a way to boil that water as efficient with as little work and effort as you can. That's what I did.
What I'm learning from you is that this is much more of a mental, intellectual game than probably most people realize. You sort of think it's all very primal. Until you do it, probably.
It is primal, get it, but you have to be smart. You have to be smart about it because it's like everything you do out there is a calculation, everything. So you go, I'm going to go fishing. It's not like, I want to go fishing because I like fishing. Mm. It is like, okay, if I spend 5 hours fishing now, what are the chances of me catching something? And if I don't catch something, I've wasted 5 hours. I could have picked berries. Mm. So what is more likely? Do I need the berries or do I need the trout? And then you have to make that call.
Was the answer a mix of both?
Yeah. And that answer change as you go. Because, for example, you rock up the first day, you're full, you got a lot of fat on your body, you're real good. Like, you have a different priority then now we're in like a few days into it. Now I'm going to have a different priority. Now I just got a possum. I have some meat hanging there. Mm. Now I can change my focus to something else.
How did the possum taste?
Fantastic. So here's the thing. It's protected in Australia. We can't hunt possums here. Mm. New Zealand, it's a pest. They shoot off them and everybody will be happy about it. I found there's actually a company in Tasmania now which are breeding and using it as a meat source. So you can actually buy possum meat now.
What would you compare it to? What kind of meat?
Tell you, saying that taste buds would be slightly different and there wasn't be salt and pepper and all those things out there, right? I remember the first try I had was that, what is it called, the Maillard effect of cooking meat, you know, the browning of the meat. Mm. It tasted real salty because there's sodium in meat and then like there's the change of the browning color, gives you flavor.
Okay.
I remember us tasting very delicious. Like it was good enough that I would eat it today, like if I had option.
And that was a good moment by the sounds of it.
There was a great moment. And there's also a sense of relief. You know, you're always thinking about this. I said, there's a gamble, what you can do and what, like priorities.
But that gives you a mental break, doesn't it?
Yeah. So it just goes, food is done.
Were you uncomfortably cold a lot of the time?
At times. Yeah, at times.
Not most of the time?
Depends what is uncomfortable. Like some people think certain things are comfortable. I didn't have frostbite or I didn't, I think uncomfortable means so much different to different people. Like some people don't like training. They go, oh, I can't run. Oh, it's awful to run, right?
Gotcha. Yeah.
I go running and I go.
That's your joy.
And yes. I think, does it feel hard? Yes. That's Do I got lactic acid? Yes. That's a burn in my legs. Yes. Do I find this uncomfortable?
It's all about the interpretation.
No, it's an interpretation, right? Same thing in the bush. You're out there. Your interpretation is different. So everybody has a different. Do I say that my, you know, was I uncomfortable at times? Yes. Was I expecting it? Also yes.
Yeah. Expectation is a huge part.
Expectation
to play.
Is a huge thing. And I think that comes back to what we talked about before. Having a mental, positive mental outlook is important, because if you start negative, like thoughts in your head, and you let that, it's not going to get better. Like, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse.
Speaking of what's going on in your head, did you see the actual psychological side of being alone as a big challenge going into it?
Going into it, I wasn't sure. So, like, I consider myself fairly mentally strong, but the whole idea of doing something like this is to find out how far can I push it, right? So I explained this to before, and I said, okay, think this is grade 1 to 10. You start on a 1 and you're sort of keen to find out 2. And you go to 2 and you push yourself a little bit more, you get to 3 and you, and that's basically it. Like your mental side, doing what we did is more or less impossible in real life. Like, it's very hard to get that point. This is a way for us to have an opportunity to just push that boundary, and I don't know how I react. And that's the beauty of it. Like, I want to push myself to the point where I haven't been, so I can learn from that experience and go, I reacted like this. I reacted good, badly, indifferent. And then I go from there.
Was the psychological strain of being alone harder than you expected?
I think it was on par with what I expected, to be honest. It was on par with what I expected. The psychological.
Describe what the psychological pain is like. What's going through your mind when you're aware of that and feeling it at its worst?
Oh, but how would I say? Okay, so let's take something people can relate to quite easy, right? So let's say you apply for a job. So you're applying for a job, you're going in. Casting would be the same thing for me. You're excited, you like the job, you prepare, you put time and effort in, you put your resources in to get this job, you do the interview, you walk in there and you think it went really well, and then you don't hear anything back. Then your mental side go, oh, like, I didn't get it. So then you can choose, like, push your bottom lip out and go, this is not for me, I'm going to do something else. Or you go, I'll apply again. And you build yourself up, you do. Now you look at what you did last time, you're like, what can I do better? Can I improve this? Can I push it a bit more? And then you do another application, and then you go in, you do another interview, and so forth. And
That example, though, I'll just stop you if I can. There are elements you can control, so you can choose to apply for the next job. When you're alone and you don't have a choice to bring other people in, you don't have a method of changing that crucial dynamic, it's out of your control.
Yeah, but everything is out of your control, really. You can only focus on yourself. That's it. Like, you can't change other people. You can't change, like, in a casting, I can't change what you perceive or what you do. Mm. You may like me, you may not like me, and that's none of my business. Mm. I can only be true to myself and focus on myself. Same thing being alone. It's not different. You're in alone. You focus on yourself. External factors you cannot affect. I can't affect if it rains. I can't affect if there's no animals there. I can't affect if there's no fish. If fish are not biting. I can't do anything about that. All I could do is focus on me and what I am comfortable in doing. And if I think I can do something better, which everybody can, you can always improve something, you try to improve it and then you try again. And you're trying to go from that 6 to the 7 to the 8 in push. And that's basically the whole show.
There's so much we could still talk about, but we are almost out of time. So we started this conversation by talking about the fact that you were a big fan of the show, that you were fascinated by it. You'd followed all the American episodes. And we also talked about that you live an interesting life that has a duality to it, where you have a really inner city life, but you have this connection to nature and to hunting and surviving. So given you have that perspective, what do you think it is about this show and what it reveals that makes it so popular? Because this is the most successful thing that SBS has ever done in Australia, which is incredible. It clearly is resonating, and it comes at an interesting time where we've sort of been through the pandemic and had to rethink a lot of things about the way we live. Why do you think this show is so fascinating? And especially I'm interested in that, given that you were a fan and now you've been a participant.
Yeah, so obviously this is my opinion about it. I think TV in the general has gone, over the many years, has gone from, when I was young, quite a lot of TV was educational. You know, you looked at cooking shows and so forth, and they tell you how to cook and they had a recipe and you can follow it and so forth. Everything moves. In recent years, I find a lot of TV has become what's so-called reality show, right? So there's a lot of drama involved. They put people together. It sort of feels a little bit contrived. It feels a little bit like pigeonholed. And I think humanity is in general get drawn to drama because it's drama in our lives. It's something exciting. We can be upset with people. We can cry with people. We can get angry at people. Just the fact that they have some characters on TV that is really out there and people love to have arguments how stupid they are and what they're doing and all that thing because people get involved. People get involved in it.
Emotional investment.
And then I think a lot of it has become so successful that it's almost now managed to do that kind of TV because people want to see it. It's like
we're saturated with that interpersonal drama.
Yeah. Now, Alone and why I like it is because there is no film crew. You know there's one person. And if you've been any time out in the wild, and literally, let's face it, we're going to go out, we're going to be in there, we're going to starve, we're going to be really starvation, we're going to push our limits physically, mentally, everything's going to go against us. You're going to get drama. Like, you're going to get drama. There's just no way you can do this show without getting drama. I'm super excited to see how the edits come out for me because obviously I don't know what edit is. So I know what I've done. And obviously we have limited time. So
they're going to choose the narrative of your story.
Yeah, a little bit. You're going to get gaps. And I find it really interesting to know what other people find interesting is sometimes quite different to what I found interesting. Mm. And that's fine, right? But it's also good to look at the other guys, right? You look at them and you go, what was your spot like? And what problems did you have? And you know the broad things, but the production are really good at keeping everything separate. So I don't know anything about the other guys done. I don't know where they were. I don't know how long they went.
You still don't know?
No.
Finding out the same time as us.
Yeah, I'm watching the show as everybody else. and that's why I'm like, that's exciting to know what.
So you don't know who won?
No one knows.
Wow. Interesting. Andreas, great to speak to you. Thanks so much for coming on our show.
Thank you for having me.
That was Andreas Lunden. So we don't know whether he wins the series or not. Depending when you're listening to this, we're partway through the series, so we're not at the end yet. As we heard, even he doesn't know who won or how long the other contestants lasted. And it's just, as he said, so fascinating seeing what they do when they come up against these extreme challenges. So that was great. Quite a different interview here on The Weekend Briefing, getting into that real primal survival stuff. And as we talked about partway through, I just hadn't realized what a mental game it is, planning your resources and trading off the cost versus reward on so many of these micro decisions you have to make every single day. Absolutely fascinating. Hope you enjoyed it. If you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast in the app you're listening to us on. Rate and review. We'd love you for that. And I'll catch you later. Listener.